Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our 3 Ideas in 30 Minutes, Parshas Nitzavim and Vayelech. First, I want to thank very much our sponsors for this evening, Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, and gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. We continue to be grateful for their incredible generosity, and it's a great privilege to welcome Michael to our shir this week. Although, Michael, I see you're not partaking of the hot dogs. You and I think alike. Okay, I want to thank the Fedaks, though. And I also obviously want to dedicate our shir for Refuah Shleima for Yehudis Kayla Bas Chana Malka as we continue to daven for a speedy and painless Refuah Shleima for her. We're going to go a little bit out of order. We're going to start on page 2 tonight. Page 2 is, I just want to keep you all on your toes. It's okay. Exactly. There you go. So we're going to start at the beginning of Parshas Nitzavim. The Pasuk has a very strange Pasuk. Now I'm going to read it for you. You're probably not going to notice anything strange about the Pasuk, and then we're going to see an unbelievable idea from Rav Shalom Shwadron. If Gersh were here, I would call him out, but he's not here, so he doesn't get called out. The Pasuk tells us in chapter 29, verse 15, Ki atem yedatem, eis asher yashavnu be'Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu says, you yourselves know what it was like when you lived in Egypt. Ve'eis asher avarnu be'kerev agoyim asher avartem, and when we passed by the nations that we encountered. And as we passed by these nations, we saw their detestable things and their abominations. Eitzva, Evan, Kesev, Zahav. What are we talking about? We're talking about wood and stone, silver and gold. And then the pasuk continues. Pen yeshbachem isho isha. Maybe there is a man or a woman. O mishpacha, or a family, or a shevet, or an entire tribe. Asher levavo pone hayom meim Hashem Elokeinu, that turns away from Hashem your God. Now, in and of itself, it seems like a pretty innocuous pasuk. All I did was read the pasuk now. Listen to what Rav Shalom Shwadron does to the pasuk. He breaks it up into pieces. And his essential thesis is as follows. That what the Torah is describing here is what I'll refer to as a slippery slope. As a slippery slope. Sometimes something feels or seems very innocuous at the beginning. But the more you experience it, and the more you're exposed to it, the less it bothers you over time. So for example, I'll just use an example. Let's say someone says a curse word around you for the first time. It might jolt you, might surprise you. But if you hear that word over and over again, what happens eventually? So it wears down your sensitivities. So by the 100th time that you hear that word, you're no longer shocked by it. You're now used to it. That's the way human nature works. That the more we're exposed to something, the less of a shocking impact it has on us. Because why? Because we are influenced by the things around us. So the more things we hear, and the more things we see, and the more things that we expose ourselves to, even if the first time it might surprise us, but if you experience it or see it or hear it over and over and over again, eventually it's going to wear down your sensitivities, and you're no longer going to be bothered by it at all. Now, says Rav Shalom Shwadron, let's go back to the pasuk. I'm going to read it to you again. I'm going to translate all of it, but you'll see how beautiful his reading is. And I'm in the middle of page number 2. He says, first it says, again, we went through Egypt. Vatiru eshikutzehem vesgulehem. First of all, when it refers to what we experienced in Egypt, it refers to it as things that are detestable and abominations. In other words, when we first were experienced and exposed to idolatry, it was shocking to us. It was detestable to us. It was an abomination. We knew that idolatry was wrong. And he quotes Rashi, who says, "Al shem sheheim muusim bishakatim," that it was despised by them the first time they saw the idolatry of Egypt. But what happens when you get exposed to the culture of Egypt over and over and over again? What once was an abomination and detestable, by the very next words of the pasuk, becomes Eitzva Evan. All of a sudden, it's now, it's parv, it's vanilla. It used to be very bad, but now it's not bad or good, right? So what used to shock me, that curse word that the first time I heard it made me, whoa, I can't believe that person said it. By the 10th time already, now it's just, okay, that's how people speak. It doesn't bother me anymore. Eitzva Evan. Eitzva Evan is like a code word for vanilla language. Vanilla, it's parv. Doesn't bother me anymore. And then, as you continue going on over time, it no longer is a detestable thing. It's no longer just Eitzva Evan, which means wood and stone. What does it become next? Kesev Vezahav, gold and silver. So what started off as something that's detestable to you, all of a sudden becomes something that's parv, it's something vanilla to you. All of a sudden, that's not just that it's not no longer detestable, now it's a mitzvah. It's the proper way to do things. This is how we speak. This is how I get someone's attention. This is how in my industry you're supposed to make presentations. That's how what I had to do if I want to keep my job. So all of a sudden, something, a word that previously had surprised me, jolted me, had maybe made me uncomfortable, all of a sudden, now it just doesn't bother me at all. To all of a sudden, now I'm rationalizing that I have to do it because that is how I am going to keep my job. That's the industry standard, whatever the case might be. And I can think of a million different examples. I can talk about business ethics, where maybe the first time you bent the rules or you saw the rules bent a little bit, so you didn't sleep so well that night. Maybe you were, you know, your heart was palpitating and racing. By the second time, okay, now I've been there, done that, it doesn't bother me. By the third time, now already, I have to do it because I'm going to give tzedakah and I'm going to support day school education. So it's a mitzvah for me to cheat people and to steal because I'm doing it for, it's kesef as a hav at this point. It's something that is virtuous. And so says Rav Shalom Shwadron, what this pasuk is describing for us is a continuum. It's a slippery slope of recognizing the things that are around us, the things we are exposed to, we are influenced by them, whether we realize it or not. And the more we get influenced by it, little by little, it's going to wear away at our sensitivities so that something that at the beginning might have bothered me, all of a sudden, as time goes on, isn't going to bother me at all. That image that at some point I looked away and said, no, I really shouldn't look at that, already by the third, fourth, fifth time the pop-up comes up, okay, now it's not so bad. Now it's a good thing. It relaxes me. It's good for my, right? We rationalize it. Now it becomes a mitzvah. So that, says Rav Shalom Shwadron, is what the pasuk is describing. I think it is a very powerful idea to think about. Approach Rosh Hashanah. Things that might be common to us, things that we might take for granted, things that no longer bother us, at one point might have bothered us. And part of what Rosh Hashanah is there to do is to recalibrate our sensitivities, to remind us of what is right and what is wrong. Things that over time we might have become desensitized to, but to remind us nonetheless that they are the incorrect things to do. And then he takes it a step further. And he says, look at the next pasuk, because there's another side to influence. One side of influence is the more I'm exposed to something, the more desensitized I get. The second part of influence is the recognition that the more I see someone do it, the more of an impact it's going to have on everyone else around them. And so look at the next pasuk. He says, "Pen yesh bachem ish o isha." Maybe there is a man or a woman. It starts off as individuals. It's one person. One person might use that word. One person might speak a certain way. One person might cheat on his taxes. One person. It's only one person. But what happens in the next pasuk? In the next word in the pasuk? Oh, mishpacha. When one person starts acting a certain way, who does it start to influence? Never just stays with you. Then all of a sudden, those morals and ethics and values are going to filter down to the rest of your family. And then what happens shortly thereafter? It's no longer ish for isha. It's no longer mishpacha, but rather now it's a shevet. It's now a shevet. Now it's an entire tribe. So it's the recognition that my actions or the actions of one individual are not self-contained, but rather there's a domino ripple effect of the way we behave and the way we conduct ourselves. In the same way, things that I expose myself to are going to slowly but surely influence me, so too the people that I surround myself with in my actions are slowly but surely going to influence other people as well. And so it's not just that we are improving ourselves as we approach Rosh Hashanah. It's the recognition that when we improve ourselves and when we change little habits about ourselves, there's an impact. There's a ripple effect that happens to other people. A change that you might do in shul, you decide not to talk. You decide that you're going to say a yesh me rabba with a little bit extra, you know, confidence. You're not going to listen to lashon hara. You're going to, whatever the case might be, that is going to now have an impact on the guy next to you. Because the guy next to you might, whether consciously or self-consciously, probably he'll make a snide comment, a sarcastic comment. That's one of our defensive mechanisms when someone's doing something that we're not doing, we feel guilty about it. But little by little, it seeps through. And what starts as a change for one person can slowly become a family, becomes a tribe, and becomes an entire people. So it's two sides, says Rav Shalom Shwadron, of the coin of influence. and the slippery slope of influence, both in the positive and the negative. In the positive, it's recognizing that my actions can slowly but surely impact other people. The negative is the recognition that even if I'm surrounding myself with one negative person, it's going to have an impact on me. It's going to influence me, whether I realize it or not. And that influence is going to be like a slippery slope. It's going to happen slowly. It's slowly going to desensitize me until eventually it's not going to bother me at all.
A negative turn a positive.
Well, it's just two sides of the coin. It's influence can be used negatively and influence can be used positively. There's a positive side to influence, which recognizes that if I do something better, other people are going to be influenced of it. The negative side of influence says that if I do something wrong, people are going to be influenced by it. So that's what he's describing. But it's that slippery slope component. It's why the Rabbeinu Yonah writes in his Shaarei Tshuva that part of the challenge of when we do something wrong is if we do it over and over again, what he describes as nases bo keheter, that eventually it becomes permissible to us. The more you do something, it stops bothering you. You become desensitized to it. It's exactly what Rav Shalom Shuadron is describing here. And he finishes off his beautiful piece on page number 3 with one line that I underlined. He says, the whole purpose of this is ba'im l'lameid sha'al yomar adam ani mechusan. A person should never say, I'm protected. I can be around bad influences. I can be around things that are detrimental. But I'm strong enough. I've been doing this long enough. I'm at a certain age. It doesn't bother me anymore. The images, the words, the values, I'm confident enough in who I am. I believe it's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that tells us, Al tadina, no, what am I? Don't believe in yourself. Al tamin ba'atzmecha ad moscha. Thank you. Don't believe in yourself until the day you die. Why? We should never be so confident, no matter what age we're at. We're never completely protected from the influences around us. And so at any stage of life, we have to at least be intellectually honest and understanding how the things that we are exposed to are going to influence us. There are billboards on I-95 that when I first moved here caught my attention. Now it catches my children's attention, right? You become desensitized to it. So number one, he says, don't ever say ani mechusan, don't ever say you're protected. Or don't ever say alai ein hadavar mashpia. No, that's not going to impact me. That's not going to affect me. I can watch those movies and I can see that's not going to bother me at all. We should just be intellectually honest. I'm not saying we're going to fix ourselves and change and become perfect overnight. But the starting point is being intellectually honest with yourself of things that maybe, little by little over time, you became desensitized to. And maybe the job of a Rosh Hashanah is for us to recalibrate that set of sensitivities. That is idea number one. Beautiful idea, Rosh Hashanah Mushrajon. Idea number two, page number 4. Rav Yehuda Leib Chasman. Now, I am not a bucky in the writings of Rav Yehuda Leib Chasman in his Oryal, but Rav Moshe Weinberger quoted this idea once, and I looked it up inside because it made a very big impact on me, and I want to share it with you. It's on the pasuk of, very famous pasuk, you're going to hear the tune, Noam's going to sing it Motzei Shabbos at the Kumsitz, right? No, that's Kikarav Elecha Davar Mod, right? Lo Bashamayimi, it's not in the heavens, and it's not across the sea, but Kikarav Elecha Davar Mod Beficha Bevavcha, it's right in your mouth. And this, of course, is a reference to tshuva, a reminder that tshuva is not something distant, it's not something impossible, but it's accessible to us. Ask Rav Yehuda Leib Chasman, I understand. You see, in Gemara terms, we have something that's called a Havamina and a Maskana. The Havamina is like the assumption at the beginning, and the maskana is the conclusion, okay? Now, if I were orchestrating this pasuk, and the havamina is lo bashamayimi, it's not in the heavens, so what would be like a natural correlation to that? Okay, it's not in the heavens, but it's where? Where would you, like what analogy would you give me? You'd say it's not in the heavens, but it's? What? But it's like on earth, right? In other words, it's not all the way up there, but it's close, but you have to like give a apples and oranges connection, analogy. What do we do here? It's very strange. We say, lo bashamayim, it's not in the heavens, but where is it? It's in your mouth. That's like, you know, I always remember when I lived in Boston. So you go to downtown Boston, there's a street sign that says New York City this way. So I remember the first time, I was like, why does it always take us so long to get to New York if the sign just says it's right over there, New York City's this way? So obviously it took me a few years to realize that that was just directional. It doesn't mean that you're going to get there anytime soon, right? So lo b'shamayim, it's not in the heavens. But I would expect the next part of the analogy to be something that's like close to the heavens. Might not be in the heavens, but it's 2 miles away from it. The distance between our mouths and the heavens is astronomical. It's almost like an unfair comparison. The comparison doesn't make sense. There's no correlation. So listen to what he says. I'm going to use Ramosha Weinberger's explanation of it, and then we'll read it inside as well. Ramosha Weinberger understands where Yudaleib Chasman is saying is the following. That in anything, and especially in Judaism, there are two ways to experience Judaism. One as an insider, and one is as an outsider. And those two experiences are very different. Okay, we're going to come to this in our next idea, but I'll foreshadow it a little bit. Let's take classical music for a second. I beat up on classical music in the shir all the time, even though I love it, right? Classical music, as an insider versus an outsider, are experienced very differently. If you're an insider to classical music and you understand all of what Beethoven or Mozart was trying to do and all the nuances, so classical music is rich and enjoyable and engaging and energizing. If you're an outsider to classical music and you have no appreciation to it whatsoever, so what is classical music then to you? It's a mind-numbing 2-hour root canal. Because at best, you're going to fall asleep. And at worst, you're going to try to be on your phone the entire time, right? I talk about art all the time. I wish I had an appreciation for art. I don't know, I grew up in Boston. I'm supposed to be elite and snobby like that. I don't have it in me. I am that anyways, okay. I don't have it in me. You could take me to any art museum, anyone's house, Picasso's. My 3-year-old could draw that. Like, I literally don't understand it. To me, going to the Met, Museum of Art? I don't know, what's it called, whatever? Metropolitan Museum of Art? Isn't that in trouble nowadays? Aren't they anti-Semites? Or the Boston Museum of Fine Arts? To me, as an outsider, it's I have zero appreciation. But if you're an insider, if you've studied art history and you've traveled the world and you've seen the great museums, okay, as an insider, you're going to appreciate exactly what Picasso was trying to do and exactly what, I don't know, whatever else was going to do, right? Rembrandt and all those other fancy guys who I was just testing your knowledge on, okay? Now, what does this have to do with Judaism? Judaism is the same. And I think this is also a very, very powerful idea. Judaism as an outsider, insider are experienced very differently. If you're an outsider to Shabbos, you've never experienced the joy and the holiness and the serenity of Shabbos. If you're an outsider to Shabbos and someone tells you have to turn off 25 hours, you know, that's insane. That's crazy. You expect me to turn off my devices to connect to God for 25 hours? Again, that's a miserable experience as an outsider. But if you're an insider to Shabbos, if you've experienced how beautiful and sanctified and magnificent Shabbos can be, Shabbos isn't a detestable 25 hours. Shabbos is the best time of the week. It's the holiest time of the week, right? And I can give any analogy for that. Learning Torah, right? An outsider is going to come to a Beis Medrash. They're going to see all of these people poring over texts that are 2,000 years old, that are written in a foreign language, Aramaic. And they're going to say, you guys are nuts. You're out of your mind. You guys are crazy. It's lunacy. I mean, it could, right? But as an insider, okay, we understand. We understand the beauty of Gemara. We understand why Gemara is so important and so beneficial to us and our connection to Hashem. So anything in Judaism, as an outsider, is going to look one way. As an insider, it's going to look an entirely different way. That's the Rav Yudaleib Chasman, is exactly what's happening in our Parsha. What he's describing when he correlates heaven, lo b'shamayimi, b'ficha u'b'vavcha, but it's in your heart and in your mouth. What's he really telling us? Is that there are two ways to experience Judaism. One is b'shamayim. In other words, you're an outsider. As an outsider, Shabbos is crazy. And learning Torah is crazy. All these things are crazy as an outsider. But if it's b'ficha, b'vavcha, but if it's part of me, now I'm no longer an outsider. Now what am I? Now I am an insider. And so what this pasuk is telling us now, and this is again so beautiful, I hope you appreciate how great this idea is. It's not just about accessibility, right? Coming into this year, if I told you this pasuk, you would say, yeah, Rabbi, we know that pasuk. It's Hashem's way of telling us that Torah and tshuva is accessible to us. It's much deeper than that. Really what Hashem is doing is Hashem is inviting us to come inside. Hashem is inviting us to come inside. Because there are parts of Judaism that, again, whether consciously or subconsciously, every single one of us says, that's not me. Right? Like, that's the other guy. That's not me. I'm not the guy who goes to Minyan. I'm not the guy who learns Gemara. I'm not the guy who does this. Right? It's not me. It's the other guy. Or you say, right? You say, I've tried that, but it... Oh, what is Hashem inviting us in this pasuk? Hashem is inviting us to come inside and to get a different view from the inside. So all of a sudden I said, that's not me. I'm not the guy who learns Gemara. Well, have you tried it? Have you come to Rabbi Goldberg's new Kinyan Masech Tashir, which is built for all levels to really acquire how to learn Gemara? Have you really enveloped yourself in it so much so that you could say that you're not the guy who learns Gemara? I'm not a Minyan guy. I'm not a guy daven at home. I'm not a shul. Well, have you tried the benefits of Tefillah B'Tzibur? Of what it means when you're with a community of people that are striving and pushing each other? Don't say it's not for me as an outsider. You have to be an insider. And when you're an insider, then you'll fully appreciate the beauty and the significance of what it is that you are participating in. And so now let's read the pasuk again. Lo bashamayimi. Hashem says it's not just that it's, don't think it's inaccessible, but b'vicha b'vavcha, it's in your heart. What Hashem is really saying is don't view it as if it's in the heavens. Don't view it as if it's something so distant from you that you're an outsider to it. But rather, b'vicha b'vavcha, I want you to know that you're an insider. Come in, join me, Hashem says. And so I guess that would be my challenge to you in this idea, is if there's something in your consciousness, in Judaism, where you say to yourself, that's not me, or that's not the way I've done it, or that's not something that speaks to me, or that's not something that inspires me, that's not meaningful for me, I hear this all the time, right? Come inside, try it. Try it for a little while. You know, when Rabbi Goldberg first started his whole Shal Shudas kick, and driving, you get out, right? So I didn't know that I fully appreciate it. It took me a little while to come on board, right? But what happened? Part of the reason why I never came. I was an outsider to it. I heard him talk about it, but I was an outsider to it. All of a sudden, I started coming. And then I was an insider. And all of a sudden, you know what? Shal Shudas is a really beautiful time of the week. It's really nice. Singing, you lose yourself in it. You lose the time, the Divrei Torah. Right? As an outsider, it was the Metropolitan Museum of Art. As an insider, it was something that was meaningful and rich and beneficial. What was the difference? The difference was that Rabbi Goldberg invited me to come inside and I accepted the offer. Hashem is inviting us to come inside. Try things. Don't write them off and don't write yourself off. Because until you've come on the inside and you've tried it as an insider, you'll never be able to fully appreciate how much it can actually change your life. So that is idea number two. Idea number one is slippery slope. Rosh Hashanah is an opportunity to recalibrate ourselves. Idea number two, Rav Yehuda Leib Chassman, is don't view Judaism from the outside, but rather view it from the inside. And idea number three is we come back to classical music. Why? Because, of course, very famously, the Torah compares itself to a shira. V'yata kisvu lachem as hashira azos, the 613th mitzvah in the Torah, the obligation to write a Torah. Now, oh, you're in the cheat sheet? Okay, good. At least someone reads it, right? Now, of course, the famous question, tons of people talk about it. Why is it that Torah is referred to as a song? So I'd like to suggest a few different answers. Number one is, I think song is the great equalizer. It's a great equalizer. Anyone who was at the Yishai Ribo concert this week, see a few of you who were there. If you were at the Yishai Ribo concert this week, the amazing part about the Yishai Ribo concert, I'm not going to poll everyone, but I'm venturing to say the vast majority of people there understood at most 20% of the words that they heard. At most, 20% of the songs, of the words of the songs that he sang. Okay, and even that, I think, is a generous calculation. So why is it then that 6,000 people were there and they were shaking and singing and hugging, right? Why? Because music is something that transcends language. It transcends barriers. I didn't have to understand every word Yishai Ribo said to be able to understand what Yishai Ribo said. And perhaps that's suggestion number one of the power and the beauty of Torah. I'm not always going to understand everything perfectly, but Torah is the great equalizer. It's something that can speak across languages and across countries and across cultures and across heritages. Why? Because music is that great equalizer. It speaks to everyone. The same person in China and in Boca Raton could be listening to a piece by Beethoven And we'll both be able to appreciate and understand it. Music in that way is a universal language. Torah is the same way. Number two, again, coming back to the previous idea, is it's only if you appreciate it, right? The inside or outsider idea, I think very much speaks to this. Number three, though, again, it's a famous idea, but I want to read it in an unbelievable source just to show you that it's not just like a cliche. This is the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan was written by Rav Chiel Michal Epstein, one of the great halachic compendiums of recent time. Before there was the Mishnah Berurah popular, Rav Schechter always talks about they used to learn in yeshiva. They didn't learn Mishnah Berurah. They learned Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan used to be the body of Jewish work that people would learn. So in his introduction to Choshen Mishpat, which are the laws of that govern business dealings, so he writes the following. He writes, V'chol machlokes hatanaim v'amaraim. The question that bothers everyone when they start learning. Why does the Talmud have so much dispute? Why does it just give one opinion for everything? Why does it have to be, well, Shammai says this, and Hillel says this, and Rav says this, and Shmuel says this, and Ravina says this, and Rav Ashi says this? It's dizzying. So why don't you just tell me the bottom line? What do you have to give me? Everyone's different opinions. Why is Torah Shebaal Peh, why is the Oral Torah filled with all this dispute? So he writes here, I have the underline, V'adaraba, Zoshi Tiferes Torasenu. He says it's specifically the disputes, the disagreements that make the beauty of our Torah, right? V'chola Torah kula nikra shira. The entire Torah is called a song. V'tiferes hashir, hi kesha kolos mishunim ze mize, v'zehu ikar hanimos. The beauty of song, we know, Noam's going to display it for us, Motzi Shabbos. The beauty of song is that not everyone sings on the same key. If everyone sings on the same key, that's not a particularly beautiful song. Beautiful song is when we have something called harmony. What's harmony? Harmony is that I'm here, you're there, we're all singing at different keys, but when it blends together harmoniously, it formulates this beautiful music. At the Rebo concert the other night, right, it was with the Israeli Symphony Philharmonic, it was stunningly beautiful. And yet, right, what makes a symphony? Not every interesting instrument's the same thing. You have different instruments, and each one has a different role. In fact, it was an Elo concert, so I'd say the majority of the concert were slow songs, which was really beautiful for me, not so much for my 8-year-old daughter, who was bored out of her mind. And so we started playing a game, because I really wanted to stay longer, but she wanted to go. So we started playing a game, and the game was, could you listen to the different instruments? Could you pick out the instruments as you heard them? Oh, that's a violin, that's a flute, that's a this, that's that. So it was like a game we played. But that's what makes a symphony. Each instrument is playing a little bit differently, sometimes even at a little bit different key. And it's when you blend them all together that you make something as rich and magnificent as what many of us heard the other night with the Israel Philharmonic. Says the Aruch HaShulchan in his introduction to Choshen Mishpat, that is what it means, that Torah is a song. The understanding, the analogy of Torah as a song is that we don't have to be monolithic. Jewish people are not a one-string violin. A one-string violin is a very boring violin, right? A violin has multiple strings, and each one does something different. And it's only when you play them together that you formulate the sound of the violin. The Jewish people are the same. Some of us are drawn towards one thing, some of us towards another. Some of us connect with God in some ways, some of us connect in others. Some of us prefer learning one form of Torah, some of us others. Some of us are driven more by tzedakah and chesed, some of us by learning, some of us by davening. Everyone's going to be different. But it's the combination, it's the harmony of all of us that formulates the tapestry and the beauty of Judaism. And so the disagreements in the Gemara, says the Aruch HaShulchan, are not what makes the Gemara weak, but it's actually what creates the magnificent song of the Torah. And so we saw three ideas. Idea number one was from Rav Shwadron about the slippery slope, using Rosh Hashanah as a time to recalibrate. Things that might have bothered me previously, little by little I become desensitized to it. And part of Rosh Hashanah is resensitizing ourselves to the influences and the impacts that are around us. Idea number two, Rosh Yudalev Chasman, become an insider, don't stay an outsider. If there's something that you don't fully appreciate, push yourself, come on the inside, try it. Try it for a period of time and you'll see just how meaningful and rich it can be. And idea number three is the Song of Torah. The Song of Torah, specifically its diversity. Just as an orchestra is the combination of different instruments, each playing a little bit differently, so too the Jewish people are a combination of different people, each connecting and bringing Hashem into this world in a different way. That is not our weakness, but that is our beauty, that is our richness, that is our strength. And with that, I wish everyone a good Shabbos.